name is Daniel, and I've got one question for you here tonight. Who wants to walk with the podcast? Welcome to Love Podomania episode, I don't know, 9 or something maybe. This week talking about Survivor Series. My name is, as I just told you, Dan Murphy, and joining me today is, as ever, Mr. Chris Manning. Chris, how are you?
Good afternoon, Dan. I'm fine, thank you very much. I definitely want to walk with Elias, 100%.
He's a good lad, he's a good lad. And also joining us today is first appearance on any sort of Line of Vienna podcast or product of any kind. It is Mr. Stu Davis. Stu, how are you?
Hiya, not too bad, thank you. I certainly don't want to walk with Elias.
What?
Unless I'm wrapping a guitar around his head.
It's been nice knowing you, Stu, but...
We should have established this before we invited him on, Dan.
Your short stint on this podcast is swiftly come to an end. But boys, Survivor Series weekend, what do we think of? Because obviously we had NXT TakeOver World Games on the Friday. Chris has only seen a bit of that, so we'll keep it short and sweet. But as the weekend as a whole, Survivor Series, Chris, what do we think?
Yeah, I'm nice. I've seen about an hour of NXT. I'll watch the rest tonight, which I appreciate is no good for the show whatsoever. But overall, I thought it was superb. Even I thought Raw and SmackDown afterwards as well. That whole thing, the big four coming over the whole weekend from the one venue, I just think it works. And this was definitely my top three pay-per-views of the year. NXT, what I've seen so far, was decent as well. We'll go through that in a little bit more depth shortly. But overall, definitely a B+, Dan. No problem there at whatsoever. I think there's only, going into it, there's only the one match that I really wasn't that bothered about. And even that was The Miz. But even so, I still like watching him. So it wasn't a single match. Yeah, same. And I mean that with respect to The Miz, because I do really like him. I meant in terms of it only being the only match that didn't really blow me away in advance.
Yeah.
I was highly, highly looking forward to every single one. And I don't think there were any duds really at all.
Mm-hmm. And Stu, what did you think?
I agree. I think it was a strong weekend. I enjoyed War Games a lot. It was a good pay-per-view. I think, yeah, Survivor Series blew me away as well, to be fair. I thought it's got to be top three for me as well for the year so far. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just the build-up going into it was really exciting as well for once, which is, yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I think TakeOver's always delivered. This one, little, like the undercard wasn't as good as, especially let's say, Chicago in January, or the one after that for Mania weekend as well. But the main event is probably one of the best matches WWE has put on, especially with weapons. It's easily the best match they've done for weapons since I've been watching, by an absolute mile.
Yeah, I agree.
And
you don't think it's reflective of NXT in general, though, because they've diluted it quite a lot, haven't they, over the last 18 months? It's always running the risk of it being diluted to the point where anything they put on could potentially one day be a bit thin, just because all the talent that you've established as well. Sometimes it takes time, doesn't it, to build up new ones.
Don't get me wrong, I think NXT has been fucking brilliant since Mania. Yeah. They've changed it up a bit. They've got new people in. It's going to change again after all the women call up. So all the people from the NYC are going to get involved now. So it's going to be really fresh, really exciting. I think. Yeah. I just think if they had swapped the last Sullivan and Ono match, which was fine for what it was, but if they had swapped that with Dunn versus Gargano, which was brilliant on the kind of dark match, I think it would have been elevated the show a lot, because Velveteen Dream and Aleister Black, fucking really good, absolutely class. Velveteen Dream, both of them are going to be stars, hopefully. I don't know if, well, Patrick Clark will be a star, I don't know if Velveteen Dream will, but it's an arc, really good match, some great storytelling, and kind of a very satisfying end, because it's kind of what we all predicted, and what we all predicted came true, which is very nice. Say that Drew and Andrade was brilliant. I really didn't see Andrade picking up the title at all. Did you, Stu?
Yeah, I was quite happy to see that, to be fair. Mm-hmm. I didn't see it coming at all. I really like Drew, but I don't know. I think he's already established as a main card like draw. If they didn't bring him back in after this injury, I don't think it'd be any big loss, to be honest. I think it'd be good to see him pushed up.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think he's... He's got name power already. He's kind of improved. He looks the part. He looks fucking hard. When he came out with just that kind of simple black kilt with the belt over, he looked badass as fuck. Really, like, if Roman is doing the Intercontinental Championship, kind of, because obviously he won the title on the Raw, if he is doing like an open challenge, and if they're actually going to stick to that properly, when, you know, providing Drew's injury isn't too bad and he's out for ages, a good way to put him into the main roster would be to debut him in that, have a really good match with Roman and get him over straight away.
And yeah, I think that's a good idea.
And the possibilities with that endless the amount of matches Roman could have with some good people and elevate them. What matches did you see from TakeOver, Chris?
I bear in mind, I was on the beer probably about 5 o'clock yesterday, so my memory's a little bit fuzzy. I finished. I was just about the start of the Andrade and Drew match.
So what did you think of Andrade and Drew?
Yeah, I'd never seen him before. I don't generally watch NXT. I watched the Takeovers, and I don't think I watched the previous one. But I'd never seen him before. Obviously, Tommy End, everyone knows about him. He's superb. But I thought that was Dream was really, really different. I agree with you, and I wonder what mileage there is in this day and age with a character like that. All things sort of gold dusty aside, but his physicality in the match was brutal, and a nice little tight ending. I thought, even though I came into it quite cold, it was quite quick, easy to pick up on what had been going on the overriding story arc, and even I was satisfied with the ending, having gone into it with no investment in the overall story whatsoever. It really, really impressive from both men. I especially think you're right with. Is Clark, is that's the Dream fella, and he's got a big future ahead if he carries on like that.
100%, yeah, it was a Aleister Black's class as always. And then, obviously, you're not seeing the main event, but the main event, Stu, the War Games match, it was...
That was perfect.
Everything,
just
like,
about
the pacing,
perfect, I reckon.
Who did you think was the standout in there? I think for me, it had to be Killian Dane. I thought his mannerisms, eating the key, getting the tables, coast to coast, telling Adam Cole to watch the coast to coast, fucking... power bombs all over the show, an absolute fucking unit. And again, Authors of Pain really impressed, as they always do.
I was quite impressed with Roderick Strong as well. Mm. I thought he embraced the Authors of Pain side of things better than I thought he would, actually. Mm-hmm. I thought he was really strong. Yeah, it was good. I don't really think there was a weak link in the match at all.
I think Kyle O'Reilly fucking put his head on the line on a number of occasions. Wolf getting busted open by that table was class. I mean, obviously not that he got injured, but kind of doing the spot. In fact, Wolf running in and having that truncheon was everything. There's so much in that match to kind of delve into, and Chris, you're in for a treat, shall we say.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to it, lads. Looking forward to it.
So it's a good takeover, not the best of recent memory, but still very enjoyable, and probably the best main event, and definitely like the best gimmick match WWE's had in quite a while. And we go to Survivor Series itself. And you gave your thoughts, you were all happy. I was very happy, I was ecstatic come the end of AJ Brock. But I do think the main event let the whole thing down a bit. But we'll get to that in due course.
So much to say.
Too right. We'll skip the nondescript pre-show, because who cares?
It's horrendous.
I didn't even watch the pre-show. I did see that Meltzer gave poor Matt Hardy 0.25 stars out of 5 or 6, whatever he does these days.
It's a bit... It's a bit sad.
It was forgettable. The entire pre-show was just terrible.
Mm-hmm. It's a shame, because I think Owens and Zayn could have been quite funny, especially with a SmackDown match. But sorry, Owens and Zayn versus Brizango, but kind of it was in a dead crowd where nobody was ready, so it kind of didn't really matter. But thankfully, the crowd were in and ready for the first match as the Shield defeated the New Day. And Chris, I thought this was a great way to start. Fast pace, some great moves, and everyone looked brilliant here.
Definitely. It's one of those matches where I worry about what's to come afterwards, because it was so good. Both teams, they're just completely on top of the game. You know, everything they're doing at the minute is absolutely bob on. And I was worried it wouldn't all go well for the rest of the show, you know, set too high a bar in order for things to follow thereafter. But no, really, really good. I completely can see Stuart and I talk about it at work from time to time about Roman and what he's doing and what he's achieved and the credit he gets and things like that. And I'm starting to come around to it as well. So that just goes to show even sceptics like me can be won around. Dean, he remains the same. I still think he's terrible. I've never seen a good Dean Ambrose match ever.
I think he's been good recently. He's not in those shitty jeans and the fucking shitty vest. He's
looking like he's come from the bloody trailer park. I'm starting to get a bit bothered about Rollins, because you know it seems like a million years ago now that he was champion, he was the top guy. He's just another guy now, isn't he? He's not standing out either.
It's his finisher. They don't even have a name for it yet. And I know it kind of sets up Ambrose, but whenever he does it, Cole just goes, "The knee." It's like, oh, great.
We'll talk about shit finishes when we get to Finn Balor. But in terms of Rollins, I don't think he's going anywhere. Is he anywhere fast at this minute in time?
No.
So he's the only one, I think, out of the six Rollins that was slightly underwhelming. But in a multi-man tag like that, I think you often get people just there just to move the story on from point to point. But in closing, New Day again, just absolute top of the game. Argument to be made for one of the best in the last 25 years, most definitely. Best teams.
What do you think, Stu?
No, I agree. I'm a bit worried about Rollins within the Shield. I think it's the one drawback with the Shield is that they built Rollins up to be a fantastic main eventer and really believable as champion. And now, like you say, he's fallen into he's just another fella. Like, all the build was for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And while I don't think it's a bad thing that Reigns is sort of, they're pulling him back from that big push, I think it'll probably help him in the long run. I think it's going to be a little bit detrimental to Rollins. But I thought the match overall, I thought it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like you say, it was a bit of a worry. It was such a good match to be first on. And I think it's a tough one for anyone to follow because I thought both teams were fantastic and the false finishes were brilliant. Mm. I thought it was really, really strong.
Yeah, it was good. I think within the Rollins argument, like, Reigns, they're pulling Reigns back now, but he's going to drop the title to someone around fucking February and then he's going to be pushed straight back to the top to face Brock at Mania. So we all know how this is going to go. I think it's happened the last 3 years. So, and it's with Rollins, it's a bit harsh because, you know, he can't really blame WWE too much because, you know, his injury did hit at the worst time possible and they kind of had to rebuild him. They fucked it a bit bringing him back heel and not just making him face straight away. But I think when the Shield break up again and either Dean or Roman go heel, probably going to be Dean, which will be good. I'd like to see him finally get to be his obviously better self. Maybe, you know, a proper Dean and Rollins feud again could kind of ignite Rollins a little bit. But here's hoping. We can all see at the time. I'm glad both teams are together. I'm glad both teams are putting on class matches. Mm. And I really want Kofi to get like a big main title push with like Woods and Big E backing him. And then we can have a nice little team celebration because he's been around for years, man. He's been around for like 10 years. And as they say, he deserves it. But next up, you know, we're worried about what could follow that. And what did follow was Team Raw versus Team SmackDown in the women's match. And this was actually, I thought, pretty good. It was annoying that Bayley and Becky both got absolutely battered again while like Natalia and whatnot stayed for a bit longer, Alicia Fox for that matter. But I thought it was a pretty fun match. I'm glad they used it to build up Asuka, who really needed that after kind of a bit of a damp squib of a start. And actually, I thought the kind of confrontation, hustle bustle with Nia Jax and Tamina was actually pretty good. And I think it shows that Nia needs more big opponents to face because the crowd were quite hot for it as well. So I feel like, you know, they've got Jazzy Gaber, who was in the Mae Young Classic. She's like exactly what they want Nia Jax to be. That could, if they do something with her and sign her up, that could be fucking incredible down the line, especially and with Tamina as well. But I thought, as it goes, this was a lot better than I was fearing it could be, Stu.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I thought Asuka looked almost unstoppable by the end of this match, and it built her really well. And like you say, she's in there against quite strong competitors, and I think she definitely came out firmly on top, which is where I think most people want to see her. Her character's fantastic. Nia Jax and Tamina, I think there's more of a story to be told there, actually. Like you say, the crowd were quite hot for it, so it'd be good to see where that goes.
Mm-hmm. Just a shame they're on different bands.
I agree with Becky and Bayley. I think it's a bit of a shame the way that it went off with them. A lot of this match for me was kind of, was forgettable, in all honesty. I enjoyed it as a spectacle, but I don't know, the only one I really had, like, was looking at was Asuka, to be honest. I wasn't really bothered about the rest of them.
Yeah, I said, Chris, at least Asuka, like, the match was fine, but at least Asuka kind of got, I think, maybe two or three eliminations. They built her up, finally, and hopefully now she can go on to be this kind of juggernaut we all want.
Yeah, I think that was clearly the whole point of the whole setup, wasn't it? It was 10 people in the ring to service the advancement of one, and she was the only one that stood out, and probably for that for good reason. Though, from you've just mentioned it already, the Nia Jax bit for me was the bit that I took away being the most interesting, because I've seen a million Asuka matches now. I've never really seen Nia Jax have someone really offer a realistic challenge. Obviously, she's been beaten before, and it's never really rang that true to me. But now there's someone that's not quite a physical match, but as near as you're going to get. That was the one that I went away thinking, I'd like to see more of that now. So that was my takeaway from it, in that everyone was good. Nobody was terrible. Again, as I said at the start, there's no duds whatsoever. There were just one or two bits that made it slightly more memorable. The Bailey fuck up, for example, with the pin, the Asuka hot tag and so on like that. They're the things that stand out. But it was definitely a serviceable Survivor Series match.
And next up, as you alluded to earlier, Chris, was Baron Corbin versus Miz. Corbin went over. I thought surprisingly decent match. I liked how kind of Corbin doing his run out the ring thing kind of battered Curtis Axel at one point. I think his shit talking to Maurice was really funny. Miz kind of being kind of hot up because of that was great as well. And Corbin, I think he's decent in the ring, but his finishers, he's got like the best, I think I said it before, he's definitely got like the best finisher, like, you know, his deep six, his end of days and stuff like that. He's got like the best kind of signature move arsenal out of anyone, I think. His finisher looks so sick, especially Miz does it, because Miz goes so far kind of forwards and then smashes down. It looks so good. And Baron's new music is actually really good as well. Probably one of the best songs in the company at the minute. So what do you think to all this, Chris? You're impressed?
Yeah, very much. Yeah, I mean, I said at the start, the only one that I came into with not low expectations, but one I wasn't particularly asked about because everyone else, every match on the card was so excited for. But I totally agree with you about Corbin. Everything you said, I was going to say myself. His finishes are cool as shit. And that sort of characterization, the talking shit to the crowd, everything like that, that just screams old school heel to me. You know, that's what they always used to do. They used to be telling the crowd to shut up, you don't know anything, blah, blah, blah. And that sort of thing really, really gets to me because it reminds me of the early days when I used to watch it back when I was a kid. I'm always interested as well to see the sort of the weird dichotomy when you've got two heels going against each other. I know Miz is not a true heel in the fact that he's over as fuck. But Corbin as well, he's bringing himself up to that level, I think, now where he's one of the more recognisable faces. Everyone knows him. Most people hate him, but there's a sort of grudging respect there as well. And his matches are getting better too. And this was another one. I enjoyed the hell out of it. And his interactions with Miz Taraj and with Maurice and what have you were really good. I didn't know about the Miz going off to do this movie. So finding that out afterwards obviously answers a lot of questions. But I wasn't surprised to see Corbin take the victory. I thought you could tell that story quite well. And it'll hopefully give him a bit of a boost on SmackDown.
It's a bit of a shame that Miz is going away because I think it's going to kind of fuck up Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel, who've finally been given something to do with the Miz. Done really well in the role, I think, especially Curtis Axel. I think he plays kind of the hopeless jobber really funnily. And it's kind of a shame for them too. I wonder what they'll end up doing now they're Miz-less for, 6 weeks or so, whatever long it takes to film Marine 6. But what did you think to this, Stu?
I thought, yeah, again, it was one of the matches I wasn't really fussed about going into it. But Baron Corbin, I have been getting more and more impressed with. And as much as I love him as a heel, a couple of years back, I got to see him on one of the shows at Download Festival. Oh, yeah. And he appeared and worked face. Right. And he was actually fantastic in that role as well. I think character-wise, he's probably one of the stronger that they've got at the moment because I like the trash talk, same as with Kevin Owens. I love it when he's shouting at the crowd, shouting at the other wrestlers. And yeah, The Miz, it is a shame that he's going to be going off. I think Bo Dallas has probably got more out of the Miz Taraj thing than Axel has, because I think Axel could actually be used in his own right. I think a lot. I think people will probably respect his in work a bit more than they probably do Bo Dallas. I know I enjoy watching him more than Dallas. I don't know. It was a good match. I think it kind of suffers being in the middle of it all because either side of it were two half decent matches. And I don't know. It was a good match, but again, not one that sticks in the mind very much. There was some good spots, but yeah, and I agree fully on Baron Corbin and the finishers. I think they're absolutely fantastic. Very, very cool.
It looks like such a He does look good. I think I'm glad that he kind of got the Money in the Bank kind of taken away because I think he does suit the US Championship pretty well for this point, and we can see further down the line if he gets pushed further up. I'd like to see a match with him and Braun Strowman, you know. Really, like, they should have had for Survivor Series, they should have had, like, a monster of each brand face off, but we'll get to the big lad later on. Next up was, up to this point, the match of the night, and probably the second best match of the night, as the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, the Usos, defeated the Raw Tag Team Champions, the Bar. And this, like, the Usos, once again, just get better and better, and even the promo entrance, the music, the tag finisher for the flying tag for the finish. This was, again, like, class all round, Stu.
Yeah, I agree. For me, I think this was probably my match of the night, actually.
Okay.
I'm really enjoying the work that the Usos are doing at the minute, and I think they're fantastic tag team champions. And, yeah, that finish to the match when he goes flying out the ring, wipes out the other one. I think it was Cesaro who wiped out.
That's
on
right,
the outside
yes.
of him, right? But, yeah, no, I thought that was fantastic. Definitely match of the night for me. And I'm glad it was given the time it was. Because I think they can be guilty sometimes that they kind of cut down the amount of time that these matches get. I thought 15, 16 minutes was probably about right for it, to be fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, they got plenty of time. They always look good, I think. I'm intrigued to see what they do with the Usos now, because they're obviously still building the feud with kind of Shelton Benjamin and Chad Gable, which is fine. I presume that's going to lead to Shelton heel turn and getting his proper music back and actually returning properly instead of just being, you know, a Jason Jordan fucking standing. We can't but hope. And then I'm intrigued to see what they do after that. Maybe Bludgeon Brothers or something, who need a better finisher. Maybe Zango, something. I'm intrigued to see where they go. Maybe even a debut in Office of Pain. That could be very good.
Oh, that would be good.
So who is to know? But Chris, what do you think to all this?
Yeah, I think the Usos have had easily the best 6 months of their entire career, I think, haven't they? Maybe even slightly longer.
I think it might be a year by this point, you know. It's been a long while.
Probably is. And they've gone from being complete and utter, you know, vanilla fluff to being probably one of the two or three matches that I look forward to over the Raw and SmackDown every single week. They're so solid. Even the singles match they had on with Shelton this week, I thought was excellent. Anything they're doing at this minute is absolute solid gold. And I'll be honest with you, since when I went to Raw and Sheamus and Cesaro came out in those Liverpool shirts, I've just completely fallen for them, those two. You know, the two strong fellas. I'm loving anytime Cesaro opens his mouth at the minute, I'm cracking up the poor guy. But they're in ring stuff, he's just absolutely rock solid. They're absolute top echelon, both of these teams, and they put on a match that I was hoping it would be. No problems with the length myself. I was quite happy with it. I mean, it was a goddamn long show at 4 hours.
Yeah.
But overall, I thought it felt really right, and I'd love to see these two go at it again at some point, if possible.
I kind of want the Bar to... I think they're really good, but I want them to move away from the Raw main event at the minute, like being involved with the Shield and stuff. Because kind of all the tag team titles and the Intercontinental type have all been kind of, because with Brock's absence, I mean, it's good that it's the top of the show because it makes it feel important and stuff. But I feel like tag team titles haven't been their own thing for a while. It's just been between the Shield and the Bar. So I'm kind of hoping that Cesaro and Sheamus, especially with Miz now gone as well, kind of move themselves away from the Shield, and we get the Bar versus, I don't know, I can't think who the tag teams are, and Rob the Club for one.
You could even have your Axel and Dallas staying together as a tag team, maybe, couldn't you? And maintaining that Miz Taraj persona. Mm-hmm. And just that can be diversionary for a couple of months, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think so, because I think we are going to get the Shield versus them at some point again, because I think they're probably going to want to put all the titles on the Shield again. But and there isn't many more people, but I kind of do want them just to move away from that feud a bit now, because I want everyone to get a bit of something new, a bit of something different in our lives, change it up. But yeah, this was a really good match, and I'm keen to see what both teams do in the future. Next up, we had the SmackDown Women's Championship match, Charlotte versus Alexa Bliss, and I thought this was Alexa's best match in a while, actually. It wasn't kind of a barnstormer or anything like that, but it was good, it was enjoyable. I'm just surprised, Chris, that Carmella didn't cash in her Money in the Bank. She's been hugging onto that for quite a while now, and I kind of foresaw a bit of a swerve with her coming out, everyone thinking Charlotte's going to get battered, and then it's actually Alexa that gets kind of swiped. Mm. She nicks the belt, and then my thinking at the time was that Paige would end up going to SmackDown, but that's not how it happened in the slightest.
No, I don't have a problem with long-term Money in the Bank, you know, stories over and overarching overarching storyline, because I think it does build up and it makes that surprise more surprising. when the time comes that they finally do cash in. So that didn't have a massive, great, big issue for me going into this match. But I thought it was really good. I think that Alexa's been quite poor in the ring lately. Or maybe that's been a bit harsh, but maybe underwhelming in the ring as of late. I've never really been that impressed. And so going into this one, I was a little bit like, you know, it was quite obvious what was going to happen at the end. At least I thought it was. So I was pleased it ended up in that with the victor being who it was. And I love the Ric Flair bit too. I'm an absolute sucker for Ric Flair.
Yeah. That was lovely. Yeah, she definitely didn't know it was happening as well. She was well surprised. I guess he told her that he couldn't make it or something and then sneaked in. I think that was
hope so, cute. Yeah. I'd love that to be the case. So overall, I thought this was probably, you know, if you want to rank the matches in order, this might be, you know, two-thirds of the way down perhaps. But in terms of what each individual person did, I thought they was really good because Alexa has... yeah, she redeemed herself a little bit in my eyes.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Stu?
I agree. I thought for Alexa, it's one of the stronger performances I've seen. Some of the reversals were brilliant. When Alexa went for the tornado DDT and it was reversed into the T-bone, I thought that was fantastic. And I'm really enjoying watching Charlotte as well. I think she probably brings the best out of most of the people she's in the ring with. And I think in this case, she definitely did with Alexa. I think the best thing I've seen Alexa do, though, was in the previous SmackDown, the punch to Charlotte was fantastic. Mm.
That slap, wasn't it? Yeah,
really, really good. Nice crack from it, that's for sure. But no, I really enjoyed it, and I'm glad Charlotte won it, because I think she's by far the stronger of the two. But that was the one good part of the pre-show, I thought, was they had this little... point where they were sort of, it was like a FaceTime really between Charlotte and Alexa. Alexa was on the panel, Charlotte was on a video. And I thought that was probably the highlight of the pre-show, was the banter between the two of them. And Charlotte just sort of made Alexa look like a spoiled child, which was kind of fun. Because I think she plays that character pretty well, actually.
100%. Definitely. I did see that came up on like a Twitter video because it was good. And yeah, it's nice. I like it when they kind of mix things up and use, you know, kind of experiment with kind of media and different ways to kind of tell stories and mix it up. NXT, as it always is really good at doing that sort of stuff, experimenting. But while we're on the women's division, shall we talk about the call-ups, what happened on Raw and the return, for that matter? Paige came back on Monday. She's finally got rid of Del Rio and thus now injury-free after some, like, a lengthy injury due to her neck. I believe, like, over a year it's been. She came back to a massive pop, got the crowd going, and then Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville came out to be her henchmen, beat the shit out of whoever was in the match, Charlotte, Naomi and whatnot, and then they battered, not Charlotte, sorry, or Naomi, because that's a completely different brand, but everyone else who's on Raw, Sasha, Bayley, and them lot. And then they all beat up Alexa later on in the evening, which was fun. Nice to see her back, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I recognised obviously Paige when she came out, but I focused more on the ones that came out afterwards. Mm-hmm. I only recognised the blonde one because of my unhealthy obsession with Total Divas. So that was
interesting,
pleasant.
Mandy Rose has like been specifically not on NXT telly at all because they were kind of earmarking her to go straight up. She came out. She had one. I think literally she had one performance on TV. Mm-hmm. Literally a year ago, when they debuted Nikki Cross before she was Insanity, Mandy Rose, I think it might have been Sonya Deville as well, or someone else, who they kind of debuted three women at the same time to like introduce them. This is the new era, or whatever. In fact, they were in a match with Alexa Bliss. That was Alexa Bliss's last NXT match. And then Mandy Rose has been off NXT completely. She's been just doing the house show circuit and really been really impressive, apparently. So I'm intrigued to see what she does. She's buff as, like, she's really like an absolute, like, obviously Vinny's going to like her for some specific aesthetic reasons, but apparently she's like I've seen a deadlift like 250 pounds or something like that, so she's no kind of slouch.
Right.
And Sonya Deville's been
go on, carry on.
So Sonya Deville has been on telly a bit more. In fact, she was on the NXT and the weekly show this week, filmed before the takeover, and I'm a bit surprised she's got a call up. She's never impressed that much, really. She's got a good gimmick and a good look, and she isn't bad, but she's nothing special, especially when they're going to be building towards actual UFC fighters coming into WWE at some point in the near future. Mm. I'm surprised they've brought her up at this point. But apart from that, it was exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I always look for some new people coming in.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Stu?
Could not agree more. I love watching Paige wrestle, so I'm buzzing that she's back. I've been on a high for this for weeks now, when it sort of looked like it was going to happen. I'm a bit surprised that she wasn't brought in as one of the like last member for the team for Survivor mm-hmm. Series.
Alicia Fox gets bad backstage, and then she returns.
Yeah, yeah, I thought that would have been good, but I'm a bit concerned that they've done the same thing on both brands.
I was just going to say, because on SmackDown we had Ruby Riott, the goth grungy girl, Isla Page. Yeah. We have Liv Morgan, the stereotypically hot blonde one. And then we have, in this case, Sarah Logan, who's dark-haired and a bit more rugged. And my issue with this, in NXT, all three of these have been nothing but faces for their entire run. Liv Morgan's been in NXT for years and hardly done anything. And Sarah Logan, kind of similar to Mandy Rose, has come in, not been on TV that much, kind of earmarked to go straight up. Ruby Riott's really good. I'm glad she got called. Yeah. But it does feel a lot like the old meme of, don't copy, you know, if you're going to copy my homework, don't make it too obvious, because it is the exact same setup. And I wonder if it was just kind of copy and paste quickly to get these women all on the roster at the same time, and they're going to be split up, and they're not going to be that kind of a faction, which I'm kind of thinking Paige's is going to be. I hope that maybe these three will just kind of go their own ways. Or it's because Paige, and maybe even Daniel Bryan, who was a bit coy of not having a comment about what had happened, maybe it is kind of deliberately set up as both, you know, actually Paige is leading both kind of teams, if you get me, but she's only on one brand, something like that. Mm-hmm. And if not, if it's just the same, it is a bit fucking dull, really, isn't it?
It is a bit, and I think it might be saved if on Raw they have Paige as the sort of standout for those three, which she's going to be anyway. I thought it was interesting, actually, they gave her the mic to let her run her mouth a little bit first, rather than the three of them just walking around together. I thought that was good. I think it's going to be, they need to have just Mandy and Sonya behind Paige backing her up. Mm-hmm. And I think the other three, if they keep them as a faction of three, probably wouldn't be such a bad thing.
Okay.
But I agree. Mandy Rose's call-up came out of nowhere for me, because I watch a bit of NXT, and like you say, she's been nowhere to be seen. It's Total Divas that I've seen her on as well, to be fair. I was surprised by Sonya's call-up. I thought it was a bit of a weird one. There was better options, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm really surprised the Iconic Duo didn't turn up on SmackDown, to be honest with you. Billy Kay and Peyton Royce, I think they'd have got a huge pop. It was a bit of a... Ruby Riott got a pop, don't get me wrong, and the NXT chants came on when they came in, so that was all good. But I think it's quite kind of clear they're kind of getting rid of the women mid-card scene. Like, they got Liv Morgan out because she's just been there for ages and she's not going to do anything. They're kind of just getting rid of the mid-card scene or the people who they just want in the main roster straight away. And then NXT, they're going to bring in the Mae Young Classic people, so like Dakota Kai. Kairi's going to be a lot more prominent, maybe even Candice LeRae. People of that ilk, Nixon Newell, when she's finally back from injury, stuff like that. So it's kind of a bit of a fresh up, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's probably the way they're going. I do question, though, what there is for the Iconic Duo to do on NXT anymore. I think they've sort of run their course with that, and I think they were ready for the call-up.
100%.
In much the same way that Shinsuke was, and then they kept him going for a little bit longer.
Same happened with Finn, same happened with Joe, same happened with Ty Dillinger. They kind of... They like holding fire a little bit sometimes.
Yeah.
But, Bailey as well. Bailey, Christ, she should have gone on 6 months before she did. So we can only speculate, can't we, really? But I am surprised the Iconic Duo didn't turn up, because they'd have got a massive pop. People would have known who they were, and it could have made them look, you know, really good. But hey ho, and it would have been different to what Raw did, which is most importantly. But we can only wait and see. Maybe I'm putting too much faith in creative, but I'm kind of hoping there's something there. A bit more there than what meets the eye, but that's probably going to be bollocks.
Yeah, if you want to talk about what creative I've got in store, then wait till we get onto the fucking main event.
Oh, we will. But before then, there's a bit of positivity, because by far the best match of the night, in my humble opinion, and an absolute fucking, probably up there with the best match of the year, I think. Honestly, I thought like a kind of a modern classic, really. maybe that's going a bit far, but I fucking loved it. It's Brock Lesnar who defeated AJ Styles. 15 minutes Brock went. His longest match for a good year and a half, I believe, since he had a cage match with Roman, I think. At some, maybe SummerSlam, something like that, I can't recall. But this was great. Like, the first 6 minutes had me shitting my pants. I was like, oh, they actually are just going to beat the shit out of Styles throughout and not let him get anything in. But eventually, he worked his way in. He went for Brock's legs. He got him down. Calf crusher. Brock sold him to death. Hit a forearm on the outside. Threw him into the tables. I mean, the stairs. He did... They didn't think... We all knew he was never winning, but when he got the 450, which always looks stunning, I think we all thought he might have got it, and he didn't. And then eventually, it ended how we all knew it would. Brock caught AJ from a phenomenal forearm into the F5, and it was brilliant. Like, there was a bit... It was a bit kind of sloppy at points, like a couple of times the time was off, and Brock nearly, like, fucking sent him into the crowd. But that kind of added to it, I thought. It made it feel a bit frantic and a bit... kind of bit genuine, a bit of big fight feels to.
Yeah, I agree. I think this match was unbelievable. I like you, was worried the first 6 minutes were terrifying because I thought, oh God, don't just crush AJ. This is going to be awful. I kind of expected that to happen. I expected them just to let Brock look like a super beast by destroying him. But when AJ started to come back, I popped in my living room. I really did. I was jumping up and down at one point. I was like, come on, dear God. But yeah, no, it was amazing. Very, very good match. AJ looked like $1 million. It was a shame he had to lose. But I mean, I think we can all agree it was always going to go that way.
Mm-hmm. I didn't hurt
Brock
him.
Was always walking out of there the winner one way or another. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Brock's selling was fantastic in this. That calf crusher looked unbelievable.
It did.
But I do question why he didn't just grab his head a little bit quicker.
Well, you got to think
that was phenomenal. That was a phenomenal counter, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it looked so brutal as well. Like, just absolutely
did.
I mean, AJ just sold him to death. I mean, the one of the suplex, and he kind of stumbled and fell. It was great. And what I actually liked about this as well, it wasn't a suplex city match. I think he only hit three, and then he actually brought a lot of different moves out, like the high knee in the corner, some other kind of slams and whatnot, some punches, a bit of ground and pound in there at points, and it. It was. I think it just shows, Chris, that kind of a motivated Brock against someone he likes, someone he admires, someone he likes working with, when he hasn't got a UFC match on the near horizon, he's still brilliant to watch, and it doesn't matter that he's not on the show every week.
Definitely, and again, doesn't it show the importance of shaking things up? Because when did Brock last have a match against somebody that was that small comparatively? Exactly. And it explains a lot of the timing issues because, you know, he's not used to working with someone that's probably 100 pounds lighter than him and probably, you know, 8 inches shorter. It's just absolutely brilliant. It just shows both men to their absolute fullest degree. And although he may have lost, I don't think there's anything that AJ can worry about coming out of that. You saw on SmackDown in a couple of days after that. He's just the number one guy. You know, you make an argument for him being number one guy on the planet, I think, at this minute in time.
Mm-hmm. Only Kenny and Okada above him, I'd say.
Yeah, at least in terms of what I'm aware of. I don't really watch all the Japanese stuff, so for me...
He's the best in WWE, but an absolute mile.
No, without a million, no doubt whatsoever. I just think the whole match from start to finish was great. I loved the absolute brutality of the beatdown that you've both mentioned. Mm-hmm. And then the believability of the comeback as well, which I was worried about, because there's bound to be a comeback at some point, because you can't have a brand champion being made like a complete and utter punk. But even the beatdown was believable, exactly because of the reason you've already given. Brock's decision to take AJ on, pushed, you know, no doubt by Heyman in the background, knowing exactly what would be what it would be like. It led to him efficiently selling it and believably so as well. So the whole thing from top to bottom was outstanding, easily in the top five matches I've seen this year. And I would love to think that there'd be the possibility of them meeting again at some point in the future.
Well, AJ certainly alluded to that on the SmackDown afterwards, didn't he?
Absolutely, yeah. And I would absolutely love that. I mean, I can see the way they're pushing the F5 as being this ultimate finisher just in time for Roman to kick out of it whenever they next meet up. But I initially envisaged there being some sort of, you know, screwy finish, not to diminish either.
Yeah, I thought Jinder would come in and do something.
Yeah, some sort of disqualification so that both men can leave without a loss against the record, but that's got to be the most victorious defeat of AJ's career, in that his star has only been magnified, and he absolutely deserves everything that everyone's said.
100%, yeah. 100%.
Imagine how different this would have been if they'd stuck with Jinder.
Yeah.
Absolute waste.
To be fair,
time,
to Jinder, I'm going to say this again. I still think he looks great with the belt and stuff, and his entrance, mm-hmm. everything's really good. I like how much he kind of respected the belt and kind of put it forward. Like, he was definitely like so proud to be champion, obviously, and kind of really sold how important the belt was. But so does AJ, so it's nothing. And he has got better, to be fair to him. And his match with AJ when he lost the belt, you weren't there for that. You were only for Raw, weren't you, Chris?
That's right. And there's a story behind that. We have a lad at work who works with me and Stu, and I was on him to go to SmackDown, on him all day. Oh, I don't fancy it. And he kind of hinted that he might want to go. So I was excited, thinking I'd get to see AJ and Jinder. And then he pulled out and cancelled. So now I don't fancy it. So being notoriously anti-spoiler that he is, I thought, fuck you, I'm definitely spoiling this. And then rinsed him for 24 hours after that. We could have seen this match. We could have been there to watch it. And
the mad crowd.
I had to sit and watch it at home. Gutted.
But
he deserved every bit of that spoiler.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. I can't believe he missed it. But it was a great match. And not a great match, but it was a good match for Jinder. It's easily his best. He's improving. They're going to face off at Night of Clash of Champions. And I think Jinder could really be like a good, and it's annoying because they've got Baron there, but he could be like a dickhead heel in the mid card range, and his little thing with the single rose is good, and it might have been kind of a bit dull for the, for his title reign, but a lot of that was because he had to do the same finish every match, and he was
formulaic,
he was with a boring Brock, and
yeah,
you know, Shinsuke wasn't exactly motivated either. It didn't seem like, so I think it might have been boring to watch a lot of the time, but he's kind of made a guy out of a nobody. And at the end of the day, that's good. That's what we want. We want people to go from nothing to actually mean something. Mm-hmm. And it's a good story, so fair play. But we go to the main event. Team Raw versus Team SmackDown. Before, like, literally a week before this, everything looked very different. And the card changed. As I said, we got AJ in. We got Charlotte versus Bliss and Natalya. A lot of things changed. And in this, the teams were changed too. From Jason Jordan, we got Triple H to team up with Samoa Joe, Finn Balor, Braun Strowman and Kurt Angle against Shane McMahon, Randy Orton, Bobby Roode, Shinsuke Nakamura and John Cena. Now, I thought this match started well. I thought Roode with Triple H was a lot of fun because they had literally just, it's like the Spider-Man scene, Spider-Man gif or meme. Literally is just little H and big H going. I thought that was fun. I thought Nakamura did a lot of good stuff. I liked Balor kind of teaming up to get rid of Cena. But as soon as Nakamura went, and Joe went, and Balor went, and Roode went, and Cena went for that matter, it kind of fell off the rails. And we all know why. It's because the people who didn't need protecting got protected. And who went over but Triple Bloody H?
I just love him. So his ego is now my favourite thing in professional wrestling.
It's so weird because you see him in NXT, you don't see him for a while, and you hear interviews about how he books NXT. He says, I book it from how I'd want to watch it as a fan. And, he does really good stuff. He goes to indie shows in fucking Wales. He signs all these brilliant indie stars. And then he kind of does this, which kind of contradicts everything he does elsewhere. I mean, it baffles belief sometimes, Stu, especially when it's his guys. It's Nakamura, it's Roode, it's Balor, it's Joe, it's his fucking guys that he's fucking over.
They made a big point of that on commentary as well, actually, that each person that was jumping into the ring with him, with Shinsuke and Bobby, they were making the point, he's the one who's brought them into WWE. And I think it's a shame to see. I really like Triple H, and I have for years, but he's at that point where now, at this point, I don't think he needs to do this. No. I don't think there's any need for it in the slightest. They might as well. It would have been interesting to see Jason Jordan in this match, I think. I'm not a huge fan of him, but it'd be quite good if they built another superstar instead of having somebody else.
I'd like him to have got involved
in some way.
I'm glad he wasn't in the match itself because he'd just getting. I liked him as a wrestler. He was great in America Alpha, but he's just being absolutely rinsed by everyone. He's getting booed to fuck and everything else. And it's a shame because I do think the kind of the story of him getting kind of pushed out of the match was pretty good, but he should have intervened here and battered Triple H or something, or gone heel or something like that. But we got nothing, and instead we just got the McMahon family feud again. Triple H setting up about four different kind of programs for himself. With it just didn't make sense. I felt like Braun just watching it. Like, why is he just? It was baffling, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, to have many things that puzzled me in this match. I mean, the sight of 6'4" Randy Orton crawling his hands and knees to tag in Shane McMahon at one point because he couldn't take it anymore just made me laugh. Any time that Triple H was there, Triple H, you know, he's not wearing his Raw T-shirt. He's wearing a red Triple H T-shirt.
Of course it's he just is. Everything, Cena's everything, wearing lime green because he's got a new fucking merch ranger. It's like...
you know, the whole thing, a while ago on these shows, Stu, we talked about the old-fashioned ways of just being of complete mayhem and chaos that makes no sense. And sometimes that's what you really enjoy. Like Justice League. I went to watch Justice League last week. In terms of sort of critical analysis, it's fucking bollocks. But I had a great time. I loved it because it's just daft. And a lot of the times I was smiling through this match because it was just so stupid. You know, the promotion of all the NXT people, the easy way in that some of them got knocked out, the fact that Bobby Roode just looks like a complete and utter dick. There's all sorts of things that, when combined, don't make any sense. But when brought together in the larger picture, I just thought it was great. And the sight of Triple H in there at his age, Kurt could hardly move. Triple H was
so fucked. Kurt was appalling.
Triple H was just stiff as anything. He could hardly move either, and you knew from the very start what was going to happen. That he might have a moment or two where he looks slightly weak, but ultimately he's going to be the main man that carries this on. And I'm quite happy with that because it contributes to my belief that Triple H's ego is the most amazing thing in wrestling at this minute in time. There's no length the man won't go to make himself look good. I would not be surprised if he finds himself up against Brock Lesnar next or in the main event of WrestleMania yet again.
But
the man's an absolute machine of
self-promotion. Wasn't the man standing at the end of the show? Indeed. Was Braun Strowman beat the shit out of him, and that was fun to see.
That was a brilliant little turn. Oh, he's cowering in that corner was what you would imagine.
Classic Triple H shit out and try and pedigree him and just be like, "Why the fuck are you playing that song?"
Definitely a bit of reflected glory, and then to get that corner action at the end was stunning. But again, I am firm in the belief that Braun Strowman is the is my number one next big thing. The man's an absolute monster, as they always tell us. And for one thing, I don't know if either of you two did the same, but I played a little drinking game during this pay-per-view. Every time they mention that stupid pissing catchphrase, the only time of year when they meet face to face,
SmackDown and died.
I was by about halfway through, I was starting to see colours and shapes differently.
It's not even true though, because of Royal Rumble.
It's bollocks. It's complete bollocks. And that's why I love anything to do with creative, because they can just flip and just reinvent narratives
like
for their own ends.
It's like living in 1984 currently, isn't it? Just changing history
There is absolutely no consistency whatsoever. Whoever does their continuity running, you know, deserves either a medal or getting sacked. I can't decide which.
Oh man, yeah.
I mean, it's all good getting wound up about that. However, that wasn't the worst part of commentary by the entire show.
Five fucking people.
Brilliant this time.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Booker T is so fucking funny.
It's horrendous. And I think it's got to be the fact that even Graves and Cole are ganging up on him now, 2-on-1, rather than just Graves against him. I can only imagine Booker is so stupid he doesn't realise what they're doing.
I think so. Or he's just fucked all the time. I just think he's smashed every time he's on it. Because he just... Yeah. I love it how much he fucking hates Jason Jordan. And it feels genuine, but he fucking hates him. He goes in on him every time he comes out. Like, he came out on Monday at the beginning of the, you know, to interrupt Stephanie or whatever in Triple H. And he fucking... Booker was going like, "Oh, for God's sakes, why is he here?" And I'm like, "Christ, he hates him. He actually hates him." But yeah, the commentary was a fucking shit show. Five people. Who thought that?
Five was person commentary had my head spinning. It was horrendous.
It was appalling.
Stupid, wasn't it? Completely stupid. And it's a shame because, you know, that sort of mayhem needed a bit more focus, and I don't think we got that, unfortunately. But ultimately, I don't think it took that much away. As irritating as it was, I do agree on you on that.
Yeah. What did you think to the main event, Stu?
I thought it was good. Good start. But, well, actually, yeah, good start. End of it was horrendous. The ending of that match made no sense. And, yeah, like you guys, I had Braun Strowman's facial expression on my face.
Yeah, sorry.
Looking at the telly by the
end. He's got the best he had the best confused face of anyone I've ever seen in my life. It's stunning.
It was like my Labrador when I'm hiding a treat from it. It was kind of like that. But I absolutely love Braun Strowman. I'm concerned that they're going to look at the reaction that everyone's given him and turn him face.
I think he is really face now, though. I think he is. It's just,
I don't think
his
there's any doubt about that. Yeah.
I think they just need to keep him as he is.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
I just hope they don't meddle with him.
Yeah.
It's like Roman's neither one nor the other, isn't he? He's exactly the same. I think he exists in this little weird bubble in the middle where you're neither a face nor a heel. You're just you. And I think that's exactly what Braun is, and that's exactly what he should be. I can envisage them two doing something together, because that'll allow Braun to continue his upward curve by taking the belt off him in a few months, and then free up Roman to go for higher things as well.
Do you think he needs a belt, though?
No, I don't think he does.
Not necessarily, no, but I think it would cap a...
I don't want him to go back down the card. I think he needs to stay where he is. I'm intrigued to see what he does Mania time, because I'd say what I'd love to see. And I really want him versus The Undertaker. I want Braun to be retired. Oh, yeah. I think that'd be class.
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
Not many other people that have got the same sort of physicality. Exactly. As long as it's not fucking Kane, then I'll be happy.
To be fair, the stuff he's doing with Kane at the minute, I'm quite enjoying. I've enjoyed Kane's return.
It's 2017 and Kane's getting a push still, lads.
But he's not. He's only getting put on so Braun can beat him. I just beat all the... He's just basically the big men killer. He's done Mark Henry in, done Big Show
in. It's as mystifying as Finn Balor still being on the main event page.
Don't
when he's
do this. Balor's really good.
I really like Balor.
But he just jumps on people. He's about
his
10 stone.
He's fucking brilliant.
It's Bobbins, come
on.
When
he did it to AJ and fucked it up and nearly crushed his fucking ribcage, it was class.
He's a fucking midget. And the fact that he wore red pants with a red t-shirt, like he had a bikini on or something. It
did look horrible, to be fair. But Balor, I think he's in line to face Brock next at Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
It depends what websites you read, but I've certainly seen that mentioned. Yeah, interesting.
I saw the poll on WWE.com had got up to 65% in favour of Balor last night.
See, I love him. He needs a heel turn, as so many do. And with Miz gone for a bit, there's only really Joe. And
just give him the club.
Exactly.
Give him the club and let him run riot.
What I was going to say, because imagine the club versus the Shield, for fuck's sake.
Well, they're certainly not doing anything of any note, are they?
Exactly.
They're being wasted.
Mm-hmm. But, lads, is there anything else we want to talk about quickly before we have to wrap this show up?
I think we've been pretty comprehensive there, boys. That was excellent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, listener, for listening to us. You can get us on Twitter at Line of Air Street. You can get Chris. No, you can't get Chris on Twitter. He's still not on, are you?
Still not on, mate.
Fair play
still
to you. It's so shit, man. I'm just going further
so
and further
much time.
Away. Are you
I've
on
got
Twitter,
so much time on my hand.
Yep. I'm at StuJD29.
And you can follow me at Mabrocksky. If there's nothing else to say, lads, it's time to say goodbye. So say goodbye, Stu.
See you later.
Fucking yes, that's why I went first. That's why you went first. Fuck you, Chris. Fuck you. Say goodbye.
Goodbye, Chris.
It's goodbye from me, Sir Lad.